My name is Casey DeVette, and like Nikita mentioned, I'm going to be talking about private information retrieval. So our paper is called Optimally Robust Private Information Retrieval, and it's a joint work between myself, Ian Goldberg, and Nadia Henninger of Microsoft Research. So I'm sure some of you are asking yourselves, what is this private information retrieval? And so for the rest of the presentation, I'm going to be referring to it as PIR. So let me give you an example. Suppose that there is a movie database, and I want to find out information about the movie 300, but I don't want anyone to know that I'm interested in that movie. You know, I don't think that's a very good example, not very practical. Suppose there is a movie database, and I want to find out information about the movie The Notebook, but I don't want anyone to know that I have a bit of a softer side, that maybe I like chick flicks a little bit, or maybe I think Ryan Gosling is a bit of a sped. excuse that emotional outburst. So this is essentially what we want to do. We want to be able to query a database for a specific record in such a way that the database, or sorry, that no one finds out about the record we're interested in. Now, it's pretty easy to make sure that third parties aren't able to figure out what record we're interested in. We can use encryption to make sure that doesn't happen. The real trick is making sure that the database operator doesn't find out which part of the database we're interested in. So that's the problem. How can we do it? So over the years, there have been a few different ways that people have approached PIR. The first one, download the entire database. So it's quite simple, and I think it's pretty clear that using this approach, your query is going to be kept private. Now, in previous works, it was conjectured that this would actually be the fastest way of doing PIR, that no PIR schemes would be able to do the computations involved faster than just downloading the database. But some more recent work has shown that this actually isn't the case, that there are in fact PIR schemes that can get the information faster than downloading the entire database. And so because of that, we're going to improve the goal of PIR a little bit. So for this presentation, we're going to assume that our database is a bunch of fixed length blocks. Now that's a pretty simple version of a database, but we can use this as a building block for more complicated things. So using this, we can expand it to use things like keyword searches or SQL queries, or doing PIR on databases with arbitrary length data. And so what we want is for a client to be able to retrieve a block from the database in such a way that the database operator learns absolutely nothing about which block they're interested in. Moreover, we want to be able to do this without downloading the entire database. So one way of doing this was introduced in 2007 at Oakland by Goldberg. And so what he's done is he represents his database as a matrix. Now each row of the database is a particular block of the database. So it's pretty simple to get a block that we want. All we need to do is we create this elementary vector E with all zeros, except for the coordinate that corresponds to the block of the database we want. We set that to 1. And then we just multiply that elementary vector by the database, and we get the database block we're interested in. So you'll notice that we don't really want to send that vector E to the databases, or to the servers, because then they're going to know exactly which one we want. So in Goldberg's scheme, we actually have a bunch of different servers that each have their own copy of the database. And it uses something else to ensure privacy. It uses something called Shamir secret sharing. So in Shamir secret sharing, we represent a secret by a particular point in the field. And then we choose another value, t. And we find a random polynomial of degree at most t in such a way that that secret lies on the y, is the y-intercept of that polynomial. So in this example here, the polynomials are in red, and our secrets are the green dots. The next thing that we do is we find a bunch of other points on the polynomial. and we distribute these. And we call these the shares. Now, if we have t plus one of these points, then we can use polynomial interpolation to find the polynomial that satisfies those points. And so we can find our secret. However, if we have at most t of those shares, then there's a bunch of different polynomials that satisfy the shares. And so we actually find nothing about the secret. And so this is how we ensure the privacy of our query. So like I mentioned before, in this scheme, there's a bunch of different servers, each with their own copy of the database. We're going to have L servers. And so what we do is we take that vector E we talked about before, and we use Shamir secret sharing to find L shares. And we send one of those shares to each of the servers. Now, you may notice that if we have T plus one of these servers that are colluding, they're going to be able to do polynomial interpolation on their joint shares and find the secret, E. And because of that, they're going to know which database block we're interested in. So we need to make an assumption here that the servers aren't colluding. In fact, that not many of the servers are colluding. So the assumption we make is that no more than T servers are talking to each other and colluding. So when the server gets their share, that's V, then they're going to multiply it by the database, and they're going to get a response vector R, and they send that back to the client. Now, using Shamir secret sharing this way, conveniently, all the client needs to do is do polynomial interpolation on those responses to get the database block that we're interested in. Now, you'll notice I'm using a different number for the number of server responses than the actual number of servers that we have. And this is because we could run into some problems like a server being down or parts of the network not working properly. And so we may not actually get all of the responses from the servers. But that's okay. We don't actually need all of the responses to recover the database block. We only need enough of them. And by enough, I mean enough to do that polynomial interpolation. So that's called the robustness problem. How many server responses do we need to have, yet still be able to recover that database block? Now, this gets a little more tricky if we assume that some of those server responses have errors in them. So this is called the Byzantine robustness problem. So let's assume that a certain number of the server responses, V out of the K of them, are wrong. Now, remember I said that if we don't have errors, we just need to do polynomial interpolation to get the database block. So this problem is polynomial interpolation with errors. And that exactly corresponds with Reed-Solomon error correction. And so the Shamir secret shares, those responses from the servers, are actually a Reed-Solomon code word that are encoding our polynomial. And so all we need to do is use some Reed-Solomon decoding algorithms to find all of the polynomials of degree t that miss at most v of the responses. Remember, v is the number of incorrect server responses that we have. And we know that one of those polynomials is going to be the one we're looking for, the one that encodes our database block. Now, using some techniques we describe in our paper and in previous works, we can actually make it so that in the overwhelming majority of cases, we only get one polynomial back from our decoding algorithm. And in fact, if we do get multiple polynomials, we have some ways that make it so we find out which one is the right one. Something else that's a great advantage of this algorithm is that if we do in fact do the decoding properly and get a result, then we are going to be able to figure out which of the servers have given us bad responses. And we can just disregard them in later queries. And so we're going to define the Byzantine robustness of this scheme to be the bound on V. So the most servers that we can have sending us incorrect responses, and yet we'll still be able to get that database block that we're interested in. So our paper has two main points to it. In the first part of the paper, we talk about improving the robustness of this scheme. Yeah, I know the joke's pretty lame. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the different Reed-Solomon decoding algorithms that have been used in PEER. So we start off with the Berlekamp-Welch algorithm. It was first implemented in Pierre in 2002. And the advantages of this algorithm is it's quite fast, it's very simple, and we're going to get a unique polynomial as a result of this algorithm. So we don't run into that problem of having multiple polynomials. You also notice that I've listed the robustness. So we can have at most k minus t minus 1 over 2 server responses incorrect, and we'll still be able to get that database block we're interested in. Remember, k is the number of server responses, and t is the number of servers that are able to collude, yet they won't find out anything about the database block. Next, we have the Guru-Swami-Sedan algorithm. So this algorithm was first used in Pierre in 2007, when Goldberg introduced this scheme. And you'll notice that the robustness of this scheme is better than the Burla-Camp-Welch algorithm. This comes at a bit of a cost. Actually, once we get past the Burla-Camp-Welch bound, then this algorithm is quite slow. And the reason for that is because this algorithm uses something called list decoding. So instead of getting a unique polynomial as a result, as in the Burla-Camp-Welch algorithm, we might get a bunch of different polynomials, one of which we know is the correct result. And like I mentioned before, we can get around that. We can figure out which polynomial is the right one. Now, because of the poor speed of this algorithm, we've incorporated a different algorithm in our work. So this is a Cohn-Henninger single polynomial algorithm. You'll notice it has the exact same robustness as the Guru-Swami-Sedan algorithm. And the reason for this is because it's essentially an improvement of the Guru-Swami-Sedan algorithm. So Guru-Swami-Sedan, the bottleneck is that we have to solve a very big system of linear equations. Now, the Cohn-Henninger algorithm simplifies this by using polynomial lattice basis reduction. And there's actually some quite efficient algorithms to do lattice reduction with polynomials. So we're using the Mulder-Starr-Johann algorithm, and it's quite simple and quite fast, and there's even faster algorithms out there. Now, finally, we have the Cohn-Henninger multi-polynomial algorithm. So this gives us one of the main results of our work, that the robustness, so the number of incorrect server responses we can have, can be k minus t minus 2, yet we'll still be able to decode that database block. And this is, in fact, the optimal robustness that we could have. And I'll get to that in a moment, why that's the case. First, I'm going to talk a bit about the single polynomial decoding algorithms we've used. So you'll notice the first three on this list I pointed out on the previous slide. The fourth one is our brute force algorithm. So what we've done is we take a set of t plus one of the server responses, do interpolation on them, and then see if that polynomial misses at most v of the responses. And if it does, then it could possibly be the one we're looking for. And so we do this over every set of t plus one responses. And then we're going to get a list of possible polynomials. The advantage of this algorithm is that if we do in fact have t plus one honest server responses, then we will for sure get the one that we're looking for. The disadvantage, like I said before, we're going to possibly have to do this algorithm over all sets of t plus one server responses. So we have an exponential number of cases, and so this is going to be an exponential algorithm. It's quite slow. Finally, we have our dynamic programming methods. So this is sort of a way that we can expand the cases that are possible with the first four algorithms. So we can do something, for example, like assuming that a certain number of the responses, d of the responses, are correct. We set them aside, and then we take the remaining responses, and we do one of the top four algorithms on those. We take the result of that, combine it with our assumed correct responses, and we do that over all sets of D of the server responses. And that's going to have the same effect as the brute force. We're going to be able to get all of the possible polynomials. Now, one of the insights that we've had is that these algorithms all work differently over the different cases of K, T, and V. So, for example, if there's not very many incorrect servers, then we'd want to use the Burla-Camp-Welch algorithm, because it will give us an answer, and it's going to be quite fast. So depending on K, the number of server responses, T, that's the privacy level, and V, the number of incorrect server responses, our algorithm is going to choose which of these five algorithms is the best one to use. And so the goal of this is to improve the speed of our algorithm. And I'll show you some results of that later on. So if we only ask for one block of the database, then those five algorithms are the best that we could do. But one of the other insights that we've had is that it's often the case that a client's going to want multiple blocks from the database. And so what we can do is we can combine the results of those queries, and we can handle more errors in this way. So what we're actually doing is instead of using Reed-Solomon codes, we're using something a little more like a Pivarish-Vardy code. And so to do this, we use the Cohn-Hanager multi-polynomial algorithm. So like I said, it can decode multiple blocks of the database at the same time. And the advantage of this is that it improves the robustness. We can handle more errors. So the robustness of this algorithm is V is less than or equal to K minus T minus 2. So remember, K is the number of server responses, and T is the number of servers that conclude without recovering the database block. Now, this is, in fact, the optimal bound on V we can have. And the reason for this is because we know we need at least T plus one of the servers to be honest so that we can do that polynomial interpolation and get the database block. So V has to be less than or equal to K minus T minus 1. Now, if it's the case that V equals K minus T minus 1, then every set of T plus 1 of the server responses, when interpolated, that polynomial is going to miss at most V of the server responses. And so it's going to be one of the polynomials that needs to be in the result of our algorithm. So we're going to have an exponential output from the algorithm if V equals K minus T minus 1. So this bound here is the optimal bound for doing Reed-Solomon list decoding in polynomial time. Another point about this algorithm is it requires that the errors in the queries are random. So we've overcome this problem by multiplying a random constant by the queries that we send to the servers. And when we get the responses back from the servers, we divide that constant out. And then if we use different constants between the different database queries, then the errors between them are going to be completely independent. So because of that, we can guarantee that the errors from the server responses are going to be random. Doing this actually helps us in another way. So what if we don't have enough of the database blocks to do our decoding for this algorithm? If that's the case, all that we need to do is request another block from the database that we've already asked for. And then when we get the response back, the errors in that response are going to be independent from the first time that we asked for that block. And so we can use both responses in our decoding. And so we just do this as many times as are necessary until we have enough database blocks to do the decoding. Another point about this algorithm is it fails with a small probability. Now, through some testing, we figured out approximately how often it fails. And the good part about using this algorithm is if we run into one of those cases where it fails, then all we need to do is ask for another database block and incorporate those responses in our decoding. And it greatly reduces the probability that we'll fail again. And I just want to clarify that fail here, I don't mean that the database operator finds out which block we're interested in. We just aren't able to recover that database block from their responses. So privacy still holds. So that covers the robustness side of our paper. The other aspect is an improvement in the performance of this algorithm. That must be a typo. So what we've done is we've implemented our work on the Percy++ open source project. So that's the project that Goldberg implemented his 2007 work when he originally came up with this scheme. So I want to point out a few vertical lines on this plot. So this leftmost vertical line represents the unique decoding bound. So if we're to the left of this line for V, then we're going to be able to use the Burla-Camp-Welch algorithm. And in fact, we're always going to get a unique polynomial as a result of our Reed-Solomon decoding. The middle line represents the Guruswamy-Sedan bound. So this is the bound for most of the single polynomial decoding algorithms. And finally, the rightmost line is our theoretical bound for Reed-Solomon decoding in polynomial time. Now, this is for a specific example of K and T. So for this example, we have 20 server responses and privacy level of 10. So here's our testing results for the Guruswamy-Sedan algorithm. So you'll notice we can't get past that middle line. So that's the robustness of this algorithm. I also want to point out that this is for the latest version of PrissyPlus+. So when Goldberg originally implemented this scheme in 2007, this same case for Guruswamy-Sedan took several minutes. So that result would actually be up here in the title bar somewhere. Next, we have the brute force algorithm that I talked about. So you'll notice it does, in fact, get up to this theoretical bound for decoding. However, it's quite slow. Now, this is the portfolio algorithm that I talked about. So that's the algorithm that chooses the best single polynomial decoding algorithm based on our values of K, T, and V. So you'll notice it also gets up to this theoretical limit for decoding. The only reason for that is because it makes use of the brute force algorithm. So all of the other algorithms involved only get up to the Guruswamy-Sedan limit. You'll also notice we're using a log scale here. So if you compare our portfolio algorithm to the Guruswamy-Sedan algorithm, we're actually an order of magnitude or more faster inside of the Guruswamy-Sedan realm. Finally, we have our multi-polynomial decoding algorithm. So, like I mentioned before, it's optimally robust, so we get up to this line here. And also, it's below all of the other lines, so it's quite fast. It's even very fast when we have a bunch of adversaries that are giving us incorrect responses. And so, using these results, we can show that the client-side operations of PIR can be done quite efficiently. So I want to clarify that these operations that I've talked about are the computations that are involved in the client side of PIR. Now, previous works have shown that the server side operations of PIR can be done quite efficiently as well. So, in conclusion, this PIR scheme can be done quite efficiently, even when there's a bunch of adversaries, and both on the server and the client side. This is to the point of being feasible, even on platforms that require a limited computation, like mobile devices. So to take away, now I can check out my Ryan Gosling movies on the database, feeling safe that no one else knows about it. Well, no one else except for you. But more importantly, we've improved the robustness of this scheme to be the optimal bound. So we can have the most possible number of incorrect server responses, yet still find the database block that we're interested in. And like I showed in that plot, it's very fast. And finally, we've implemented our work in PrissyPlus+, the website for which is listed there. So if you're interested, please check it out or talk to myself after this. Thank you.
Thanks, Casey. Are there any questions? I have a question, actually, to start us off. I was a little confused about the graph that you showed on the couple slides before this. So you mentioned that your single polynomial algorithm achieves the optimal bound by using the brute force algorithm?
Exactly. So,
but why is it then order of magnitude faster than the brute force algorithm?
Okay, the reason for that is because the dynamic programming methods that we talked about, so using those in conjunction with the brute force algorithm, we can get an improvement on the brute force. So that's why the blue line is a little bit, is an order, few orders of magnitude faster than the brute force in that realm.
And also for the axis of the graph, is V the number of servers that you expect are colluding or expect are giving you errors, or the number of servers that are actually misbehaving?
Well, this is for the number of servers that are actually misbehaving, but when we're actually using these algorithms, we'd be using the bound on V.
Okay. Are there any other questions? If not, let's thank Casey again.